Yeah, for more Microsoft webcasts, you can go to microsoft.com/webcast. Thanks again for joining us for today's MSDN Geek Speak WCF Deployment Strategies with Keith Elder. Now it is my pleasure to introduce today's host, Lynn Langett and Glenn Gordon. You now have the floor.
Great. Thanks for tuning in today to another episode of Geek Speak. And my name is Glenn Gordon, one of the hosts of the Geek Speak series, and my co-host today is Lynn Langett. Lynn, how's it going?
Hey, great. How's it going out in Atlanta, Glenn?
Pretty exciting. Summer is heating up. We're just waiting for the next kind of cool announcements to come out on, you know, things like Silverlight 3 and Expression and Visual Studio 2010 and Windows 7. Amazing amount of new stuff we're coming out with, it just seems like.
And don't forget Bing.
And Bing. Bing, search engine, or decision engine, sorry.
Yeah.
Might be an interesting topic for a future Geek Speak.
Yeah, lots of great stuff in the product world. Over here in Southern California, we've got a lot of community events going on. We've got our annual SoCal Code Camp at the University of San Diego coming this weekend. We have over 90 sessions.
Wow.
So we're really excited about that. It's one of the larger code camps in the United States. And, you know, we've got just a lot of different community activities going on. People who listen in from my geography just are probably already checking my blog, but it's a SoCal Dev Gal. Because in the summer, that's kind of the way that evangelism happens. We don't have very many formal Microsoft events, but
right.
We work through our communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the community does a great job of stepping up and really taking on the challenge of bringing other people up to speed and sharing knowledge and best practices. It's pretty thrilling to be able to facilitate those and contribute to code camps and stuff like that. A lot
yeah.
of fun. So for those of you who are new to the Geek Speak webcast series, these hours that we spend together are not a formal presentation start to finish with demos and things like that, but instead we bring experts that Lynn and I meet in the community at things like code camps. And we bring them on and give the attendees an opportunity to ask questions real time. These folks are experts in different aspects of technology and bring their own unique insight, so it's a lot of fun. It's an opportunity also for Lynn and I to get out of the spotlight where we normally would spend a lot of time presenting, speaking in front of user groups and events and things like that, and instead serve as your proxies and allow you to ask your questions. So we encourage everyone, if you have questions about the topic today for our guest, please use that question and answer pane. You can also Twitter us a question if you want. We're following the GeekSpeak tag on Twitter, so just GeekSpeak. And let's bring on our guest today. So Keith Elder is from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I know Keith from the developer community down here in the Southeast. And we chatted a little bit before, Keith, about WCF and all the work you've done, and so I'm really thrilled to have you here as a guest on Geek Speak today. How's it going?
It's going great. Thanks, Glenn, for the invite.
Yeah, now Keith also runs an excellent podcast series called Deep Fried Bites. Tell us a little bit about that, Keith.
It's a Southern-flavored show,
yeah.
Sort of wanted to call it Deep Fried. And obviously I'm from the South based on my accent. But myself and another gentleman named Chris Woodruff, who was a Microsoft MVP and SQL Server out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, he and I do the show. We've published about 33 episodes. We go out and interview really smart people on various topics, so what's moving in the community, as well as, you know, new stuff that's coming out. And we sort of try to take the back porch conversational approach to where we just sit down with people and we just have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of throw in some fun stuff and all that. So.
Now, I don't have the URL up here, but I think people can reach it through your blog, right, which is keithelder.net?
Yeah, it's linked up over there. Deepfriedbites.com is the URL.
I think it's in Zune as well, right?
It is in Zune. It's also in iTunes. So if you just type in, you can type in my name or Chris's name or the show Deepfried Bites. You'll find it on Zune and iTunes.
Excellent.
And, of course, you can just go to the website and subscribe to the RSS feed, and you can listen directly from the website as well. So we have a player on there, too.
Cool. So give us also, you know, a background on your interest in WCF, why you're drawn to it and you know, the types of projects and things you've worked on. And then that will sort of ease us into the conversation today. We're going to talk about some interesting deployment strategies and techniques and gotchas to avoid. So what's so compelling about WCF, Keith?
Well, I built a lot of smart clients where I work at, and when you build smart clients, you deal with services heavily.
Mm-hmm.
You don't go directly to the database. Everything somebody does, if they click a button, they search the database, you're going through a service boundary. So I did that for several years. I got a lot of experience in building services. And the company I worked for is Click and Loans, do mortgages. We do home loans.
Mm-hmm.
And we deal with a lot of services from vendors, from third parties, and we build a lot of services internally. You know, things like what I'm going to show today is like pulling credit, for example. It's something that we have to do. And different applications or different types of clients may have to pull credit. We've got some that maybe .NET, or maybe it's PHP, or maybe it's Progress 4GL, or some different, or Java, right?
Right.
And so having a lot of different ways to talk with different platforms is great, and having to be able, you know, having an easy way to secure services and things like that is also good. So that's kind of my interest in it. We do a lot with it internally with our applications. And we still have services that were written in, you know, ASMX technology, and if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Right.
But moving forward, a lot of people are moving to WCF. And hopefully today in a demo, I can show you a couple of reasons why you'd want to give it a shot if you haven't moved there.
Good. So, you're talking about a service layer that might be serving internal applications, might be serving external applications or partners. That sort of thing. And is the approach essentially the same when you're architecting them and deploying them, or are there different considerations?
Well, if you're deploying them for external consumption, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
For internal consumption, it's totally different as well. So for internal stuff, we don't deal with as much in terms of trying to, you know, do all the fancy WS Star security stuff that the services support. We have integrated authentication on the domain, and we can, you know, deal with HTTPS service. We try to keep things simple, you know. We don't worry about passing X509 certificates from application to application.
Right.
But if we need to, it's there. WCF, you know, supports that really, really easily. When you're dealing on the outside with WCF, one of the things that WCF has is it's throttled down by nature to really keep people from on the outside doing things nasty to your services. And so one of the things we have to do internally is we have to throttle everything back up. We want to get the most throughput. So that's one thing people should be aware of.
I see. So it's sort of, it's built that out of the box of services you create are going to be nice and secure, and it's making an assumption you're dealing with an external environment or a heterogeneous environment, but if you want to sort of strip things down and say, well, I'm in control of this part, both on the service and the client, then there's some switches you can basically flip, right, to get the most performance. Okay.
Yeah, there is.
Okay. What about the different types of clients? Is there a consideration between, you know, maybe a web front end that's going to be talking to a service versus a Windows app versus maybe even a mobile app or something like that?
There are. I mean, if you're going .NET to .NET, then, you know, I tell everybody, whether they're internally in my company or they're outside, is that, you know, you should be using the .NET TCP binding.
Okay.
Binary is faster than, you know, just sending stuff over XML. And hopefully we'll see that is holding true today when I do, show you the deployment. you know, if you're going .NET to .NET, you can use TCP. And that's one of the great things about WCF is that, I'll give you sort of a story here behind this. I'm a storyteller, Glenn. So we had deployed this new application internally that my team had rolled out a few months ago, and we had built it with several WCF services, and we used a WSHTTP binding on the service, and everything was working really good. And we also used a .NET MSMQ, so it was deployed with, you know, using a queue. Basically, the service took messages from applications and wrote them to a database. That's basically the gist of it. And that application, we got a hold of some of our team members there that use a different technology, which is PHP, for some stuff. And we said, hey, you guys should be sending, you know, some of your messages over here to this, because then you can get all these benefits with it. And they said, okay, hey, that's cool. That's great. Let's do that. And then about 10 minutes later, they called me and said, hey, we can't hit your whistle and generate code from your service. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. And so all I did was go into the service, and literally within 30 seconds or 45 seconds, I redeployed it with a new binding set up as the basic binding, and then they were ready to go and rock and roll.
Nice.
So I didn't have to change any of the code. I just simply did the configuration. And that's one of the great things about WCF from my point is that if I got PHP clients internally or Java clients that need to get a service, well, I take the exact same code, I write the code once, I make sure it works, I write my unit test, then I deploy it with the basic binding for those folks so that they can hit the service. And then for my .NET clients that want to hit the service, well, then I turn on the TCP. And the .NET clients are going to go much faster than the Java or the PHP clients will.
Right.
And so that's one of those good stories that you write the same code once, you make sure it works, and you just add the bindings. So.
And as, Keith, you get ready to start showing some demos, I'll just remind all of our listeners who maybe are not familiar with our format that if you have a question, just type it in the question queue, and then Glenn and I will act as your proxies to get that question over to Keith, because I do see that we have a relatively large audience today, so there seems to be quite a bit of interest in the topic. So don't hold back. If you have a question, type it into the queue, and we'll get it over to Keith. So, Keith, you had a couple things you wanted to share with us in terms of demos. Maybe you want to share out your desktop and start going with that.
Sure. Let's do that.
Okay.
As you're bringing up to speed, let's also brief people what they're looking at. You've got Visual Studio 2008, right?
I do.
Okay.
I got Visual Studio 2008 with Service Pack 1 installed.
Okay.
On it, yeah. So here's what I wanted to kind of just give you a preface of what I wanted to show today quickly is our goal is that we have a web service, sort of just what I was talking about we had a service internally and we needed to deploy it and it didn't work with some of our clients that wanted to pull it in. And so one of the things that I had to enable was the basic binding. So this scenario that I'm setting up is I have a service that I've written and I want to deploy it and it's made up of several different bindings within this one service. And I want to deploy this service in IIS/WAS. We'll talk about what WAS is here in a minute. And basically what I'm saying is, in other words, that these services are not self-hosted. And what I mean by self-hosting is you can create a Windows service because WCF allows you to host services anywhere, you can create a WinForm application, you can create a Windows service, and just simply host that service inside of a Windows service. And so what we're doing is we're not going to do that. We're going to host it inside of IIS and WAS and use the tools that are there. When you use IIS and WAS, you get extra things. You get all the built-in monitoring and those types of things that those products already provide. And if you did your own self-hosted one, you would have to go and, you know, reinvent that wheel. And
right.
So I like to host this stuff in IIS/WAS. So that's what we're doing. And the why point of we're doing this is typically when we deal with applications internally, we have a lot of different technologies to cover a large enterprise. So it's not that we don't just always have WCF to WCF, right, or .NET to .NET. We have a lot of things. So we need to deploy this service so that it can work on a variety of levels. So that's our goal today is to build a service and deploy it, okay?
Now you're also, we're not dealing today with peer-to-peer types of things. We're dealing with a traditional, I hate to say the word, but client-server, right?
Yeah, we're not going peer-to-peer. We're just simply going, you know, client-server, there's a request and a response, typically, that type of model.
And with these, you're ultimately going to wind up hosting them on a Windows Server box, not a Vista desktop or something, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, usually Server 2008 running IIS7. And with WAS.
Got it. Okay.
So what I want to do first, Glenn, is kind of take everybody through the solution I have here. Everything works, so I won't be writing a lot of code today. Today it's about deploying the service and getting it to work. But what I do want to do is sort of give everybody just a quick overview of what's here. This service mainly pulls credit, and I like using stuff that we do internally, and pulling credit is a great example. So WCF, I have a contract called iCredit Service, and it has a function called GetCreditScore where it takes a client. A client is just a straight little entity, nothing fancy, using automated properties. So there's nothing fancy there with it. And that's really all it does. You pass a client, and it returns a credit score. Then I have a credit service that implements that contract, which just then calls out to this little simple utility to say, get the credit score. And all it does is it randomizes the credit score from 320 to 850. And if the client state is Mississippi, then you get an extra 50 points. That's really all it does. Okay? So nothing fancy. All we're doing is simulating some little fake business logic.
Yeah.
And then I have I added in here, also added an ASMX service for those folks that like to go that route still and haven't gone the WCF way. So I have a ASMX service. It's attributed with a web method. Takes a client, returns the exact same thing. So it's the exact same code being run, okay? And it just implements the same contract as the other. And then I have a net MSMQ service that what I want to do is to sort of simulate, and this is really what sort of happens internally, is that, actually I'll open up the wrong one, is that we have, when you pull credit, it goes out to a lot of different vendors, and it may take 2 minutes or 15 minutes depending on what's going on that day. So it's not something that you send a request, you know, message to, and then you get back a response instantly. It's going to be a long-running process. And so that's great for queuing. So you can take a credit request, and then you say, give me the credit score, and it writes it to the queue, and then something else processes it off the back end, and then updates something else, you know, basically to let you know that that's now done. And so here is an example of a iCredit service async. So basically going to process this request asynchronously. And on this particular contract, we have a delivery requirement attribute which says that this can be queued for delivery as allowed, which basically means it can be part of a queue message. And we're going to allow transactions to flow as well, because if somebody pulls credit, well, we don't want to lose that message. We want to make sure that the message is durably stored on the file system and survives reboots, some of the things that MSMQ gives us. And so we want to take advantage of that. And then on the get credit score, we'll notice that the operation contract is just simply marked as one way it's true. So we're going to send just a fire one-way message, and then it will get processed. The processing occurs in WCF as well. So if you haven't ever seen net MSMQ, it's one of my favorite bindings to use because it takes away all of me having to build a Windows service and do all that stuff that you typically do with MSMQ type of things. And so if we look at this service, this is credit async, and it's just getting, it's the same code, but it's going to persist it to a queue. And it looks just like the other one. And so you can, you know, whenever your service gets that message off the queue, it does something with it, writes it to a database, sends an email, whatever it needs to do. In this case, pull credit. And so that's what we have. We have just a very simple service here. Now, from a configuration standpoint, just to show you that I've got several different things we're looking at, here is a WCF service with several endpoints. So what you're looking at here, let me kind of zoom in here, is this side, where you see TCP credit, max, HTTP, and basic. So I have this one service, but I want to expose it multiple ways. And so this credit service that takes a client, pulls the credit, returns back a random number, I've exposed that three ways. One with a TCP service, one which is an HTTP, which is the default WS HTTP binding that's inside of WCF, and then a basic one. Okay, so you can use the basic with PHP and Java. That's a really good interop type of binding. And then the WS HTTP gives you a lot more things that it supports other than basic, and then TCP is going to give us a binary protocol. But the whole point being that each one of these is simply configured differently, so I have HTTP, so WS, and then I have the basic as the basic. The way this works is, notice that HTTP, which is the WS binding, the address is blank, and it's using the exact same contract that we set up earlier, and I've specified custom configurations to basically turn off security and just make it a plain call. And then TCP is using a TCP and the same contract. So we're all using the same contract, and the only difference is that the address is different between these. So everything else is the same besides the address and the binding.
Mm.
Okay? So to get the point home is I have one bit of code, which is credit service. This service, I want to expose it for PHP Java clients, I want to expose it for .NET clients or TCP, and I've also got the WS HTTP in there as well. Maybe I wanted to do some other type of stuff with transactions and some extra security stuff that binding supports. I have those options available, okay? So,
now Keith, with those endpoints that you set up, did you do that through that tool you were just showing us, or did you do it manually through the config file?
I do it sort of both. I sort of set stuff up from here, and I go back into the config file. Most people don't know that this tool exists, and I'll show you what I mean by that is there's sort of a trick that you have to do. If you're inside of a WCF service that you're hosting and you right-click the web config file,
mm-hmm.
and you don't see this edit WCF configuration, the trick is go up to tools, And then in the menu is where the actual editor lives. Open it up, close it, right-click, and it'll show up here in the menu for you. It's one of those little crazy WCF tricks. And so if it's not there, then that's how, basically how you can get it open. So, I mean, most of the time I try to start here because I can move faster in this typically than I can with the config file.
Sure.
But I jump back and forth between both. I mean, it's potato, patata. You shouldn't just use the tool because if you do, then you don't know what it's really doing on the hood. So you've got to know both. So that's a good question.
We've actually got one in the queue, Keith. So
okay.
Sounds like a very pragmatic question, actually. It says, how do you manage service addresses that the client needs to know to be able to connect to the service side? Currently, I am deploying my WCF client apps using ClickOnce. And whenever I change the service address in my client's app.config, I deploy a new ClickOnce version of my app. It's working, but it seems to me a bit dirty. He says the reason he's deploying a new version for the sake of... Oh, okay, so he's not happy with the fact that he feels like he needs to deploy a new version for the sake of just one change in the config file. And he's basically saying, how can I set up something that runs one way development time and another way at runtime?
Well, here's what we did with ours, and it's still a change in the config file, but it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use this config file here. I don't know if it has app settings in it. If it doesn't, we can add it. But here it is. Here's app settings. So in app settings, sort of what we did. This is a very I can't type, Glenn. I'm sorry. Try this again. App settings. There. So in app settings, one of the things you could do is just simply add a key
mm-hmm.
called environment. This is one of the things we deal with. And the value could be, data, for example.
Yeah.
So you could just simply change that one setting. And so what we did is we went with this route, is that whenever we're developing in beta, we just want to change and point to the beta services. So what we did is we created a service that would basically look through reflection and dynamically load the services from the service. Does that make sense?
On the client side, yeah.
Mm-hmm. On the client side. So we stored the services in a database table, and we said, okay, data, I think the table has, I don't know, 3 or 4 columns. It has the environment. It has the type of service and the location in the database. And so that's a standard service that's in there, and it works across the environment. So we just simply change the configuration option in the smart client and say, okay, this is now beta. Now we publish it to beta, and it points the services to beta. The same thing for prod. So mm-hmm. we switch it to prod, we deploy it to production, and it knows where to fetch those services from.
Okay.
So about the only thing that we had to put in the code is we had to hard code the initial service for each environment.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to have a jump start to get in there. But it made it really simple to, add new services and just have those get loaded up in the environments automatically.
Gotcha.
It may not be what he wants, but that's how we did it.
Right. So the rest of the configuration of the service is the same except just for the endpoint location.
And that's actually a pattern I've seen other WCF gurus use. I don't know if you follow Yuval Louis from iDesign, but he's written a couple of books, as has Michelle LaRue Bustamante. She's written one book, and they actually advocate that same pattern of storing the values in a database and using the key value pair. So that seems to be almost a design pattern in WCF.
Cool.
Great.
Any more questions, or should we?
Yeah, keep on going. I didn't want to interrupt your flow. I just basically wanted to say that I've seen that before. So.
Okay, cool. That's good to know. So we have a service, and we have, as I showed, we have 3 bindings on this service, and we also have an MSMQ service. So what I want to do is I want to deploy it. I want to walk through going from start to beginning with deploying this WCF service, and we're going to see errors. I'm going to preface this with we're going to see a lot of errors. And we're going to fix them. So as we go through, you're going to see things break. We're going to make a change. We'll refresh the web page, and then things should basically work. So I'm going to go to build, and I'm going to say just publish this service out to a place I chose earlier, /WCF test, and just going to hit publish. And this service has been tested. So we're at the point where we know it works, our code works, we've got our unit test, everything's good. Now we need to go, we can go out to the browser and I can just refresh the service localhost WCF test and we can see that it doesn't work, resource can't be found. So we are truly starting from scratch. Now in IIS 7, I don't have any websites added here at all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create one just like you would normally do. So I'll just go in and say, let me just add an application.
Now just to preface this, you're dealing with deploying not just the HTTP-based services, but all of them, TCP and MSMQ, right?
MSMQ, everything. We're going to deploy everything. So we've got one service that has a bunch of these things.
I think a lot of people might be assuming that you're going into IIS Manager just to deal with the HTTP services.
Yeah, and I'm not. So
okay, cool.
We are, but we're going to do extra things.
Right, okay.
So I'm going to select an out pool, Keith out pool that I have here, and just give it the physical path, WCF test, /WCF test, and that's a path of it. We'll test it to make sure everything's good. We can authenticate. We have authorization.
Okay.
So everything's good there. Okay. So we basically just went and just added an application, something that, you know, your engineers that have access to servers will tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
So then they write back to the engineer who requested it and say, hey, I need to deploy this service, set this up on the server. And they go, okay, I did. You're all set. And then so you go over and you flip your service over, and then you get this. Metadata, blah, 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 registered base addresses, schemes, or whatever. And so you're like, okay, well, it's not really what I wanted. Let me show this. This particular server, this particular box will answer as Elderville as well. It's 127.0.0.1, so it's localhost. So this particular machine is really what I want to do is I want the URL not to be localhost because then my clients can't get to it. To simulate real world, I mean, this is really what I want. I want it to answer as Elderville. And so in order to do that, we're going to have to add some bindings into this default website. So if we right-click on the default website and then go into bindings, we can see that we have a couple already here. A binding, sort of the best way to put it, I guess, is a binding is really a combination of an IP address, a port, and a host header. That's really what a binding is. It's made up of those three things. And so what I want to do is I'm going to add a binding here for the host name Elderville, because that's really what I want the website to answer as. And I'm going to click OK, close, and we're going to refresh. And so we got the Elderville, so it picked that up right there for us, and that was good. Let me check something in my config file real quick. That may have not.
And while he's doing that, I'll just to remind our listeners that, you know, he's using the IIS administrator graphical user interface, but the actions he's taking can be scripted as well. So, you know, it just depends on your level of comfort of working with IIS and your level of permission, of course, because you might not have any permission in production, and you may have permission in test and you may not. So you can take those actions via a script for replicatability, or you can use that interface. So I see.
And actually the command that you can script that stuff with is down here. I actually have that down here.
Yeah, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to steal your thunder.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I actually would have forgotten about it, but I had it down here. So app command.exe is what you can, how you can basically do what I just did through the tool there if you want to script that.
Right.
That's a good thing, a reminder. Okay.
You can also
so,
deploy the XML itself directly, I think, right?
Yeah. So here's what we got. I've got this Elderville. So I set the binding up, but I'm still getting this. This collection already contains an address with scheme HTTP. There can be at most one collection. And if you take this error and you search for it in your favorite decision engine, you will find tons of people have had this exact same problem. And really what it's saying is that because we have two bindings here, we actually have multiple HTTP. We have one that answers everything, any IP address, any port. Then we have one that answers as Elderville. And WCF will only answer one of those particular host headers. So in this case where we wanted to answer as Elderville, we need to fix that. And the fix is what I just went into and changed and redeployed. Inside of the service host environment tag, there's this thing called base address prefilter. This was added in .NET 3.5. And if we uncomment that and then go back and publish it, back out, and we refresh, now we get a different error. So that's really what the fix is. I actually sort of went backwards and I forgot to comment that out earlier. But you'll see that error a lot. So when you first deploy it, you added your host header to IIS, and then you get that crazy HTTP scheme error. And this particular fix is simply adding the base address prefix, and then it will only listen to that one binding in IIS for this particular service. But now we've got a different error. We've got, well, hey, this protocol TCP is not supported. And just as a reminder, we're getting that particular issue because in the service, as I showed you earlier, we had TCP as a binding that was configured on the service. So to fix this, we're going to go back into the bindings as well, and we're going to add another binding, which is going to be NetTCP, and we're going to give it a port. Well, I just made it 7000:*, so that's the binding information that we need. By default, TCP, I think, runs on port 808 by default. I'm just running this on port 7000, okay?
Now, you had not included NetTCP as one of your bindings in the config settings for your service, you would not have gotten that error. WCF is asking to do something, and IIS is saying, wait a minute, I'm not set up to do that.
Right.
Okay.
And you may be confused, but how can IIS serve up binary messages? I thought it was HTTP.
Yeah.
Really for web, right?
Uh-huh.
And how that works is through another Windows service, actually. We can pull up the services here on this machine. And down at the bottom is one called Windows Process Activation Service right here. You guys see that? And this particular service is really sort of an interjected pipeline inside of IIS. So it provides all the health management and the resource management and those things for TCP services in WCF as well as like MSNQ as well as pipe. Type of server or peer-to-peer services. And so you configure it through IIS, and your particular service is really sort of hosted inside of this activation service. It's running the process. And so you have to have that installed, you just simply go into your Windows features and just turn on this right here. So just need to make sure that you have Windows Process Activation enabled, click OK, either on server or Vista or even Windows 7. It'll install it, set it up, and then you'll be fine. And so now that we have all of that configured, which you already do, we can now go here and hit refresh, and we get the same error. And we get the same error because we put it on the default site, but we didn't add it to this application. In other words, we didn't tell this application that it could take advantage of that TCP binding. So we're going to right-click it, manage the application, go to advanced settings. And this is one of those things that you sort of have to dig around for, unless somebody kind of shows you. You probably wouldn't figure it out. But when you click on the enable protocols, this is new in IIS 7. It does not work in 6. You'll notice that one of the things it says you can also do NetTCP as an enable protocol. Okay. And so all we're going to do here is put a comma, net.tcp, and press OK. And now that we've done that, we've said enable the TCP protocol on this particular service. And now when we refresh, voila, that message goes away, and now our service is hosted.
Right. And you're still accessing the service through HTTP. It was the problem you were seeing before is when WAS was trying to start up the service and said, hey, I'm not configured to listen to TCP, so I'm just going to fail to start it at all.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Because it's all based, you know, WCF runs itself at runtime. It's basically, everything is configuration. You know, it's not done through the API. Well, you can do it through the API, but most of the time to make things dynamic and add things, you just change the configuration. So you won't really know until you kind of put it out there as to what you may run into.
Right.
And one of the things we can look at, Glenn, is you'll see here it says HTTP Elderville right here in the URL of the WSDL. And if we look down, we'll see that all three bindings come through. So here's the TCP, which says this name is TCP credit. Then we have an HTTP endpoint called HTTP credit, and we have basic, which is the same thing / basic. And we got that word basic from the way that I gave it the address earlier. So it will just append that. And so any service that wants to call the basic binding will use this particular endpoint.
Ah, so they would get a different WSDL?
They get a different get the same WSDL. They just get this as a different endpoint.
So just to be very clear on this, because, again, I think this is new for a lot of the people listening in, and if I'm saying it wrong, you correct me, because I like the way that you're putting it. So you're using IIS to host a service over HTTP, but you're taking advantage of WAS after having configured correctly to also be able to use TCP. Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's like almost, it's very undiscoverable in a lot of ways, like you showed us through the configuration.
Yeah.
But you're kind of going through that with WAS. Is that accurately put, do you think?
I think so. I think that's a good summary. Yeah.
Okay. I do see we have a couple questions in the queue here, so let me take one from Francisco. He says, can you host MSMQ on IIS6, WCF services on IIS6?
No, because you have to have IS7 and you got to have WAS.
Yeah.
So you got to have IS7.
Yeah. Okay, and then I see a follow-on question here from the previous person. We were talking about putting the config information into the database, but he's going on and saying the client needs to know then, if you do that, where the database server is.
Well, they need to know the database. They don't need to know what the database server is because it's a client. You shouldn't go directly to the database. They need to know the service. So in your application code, you'll just have a switch that basically says switch the environment, and I'm going to use the test environment points to this service, data points to this service, and prod points to this service. The service is what loads up those particular settings.
I think he's trying to give us a tip here, and then he's going on to say that WS Discovery is coming built in with WCF4, may be an alternative to this.
So
thank you for sharing that. So okay, great. So those are the questions we had right now. So keep going.
Okay. So we've got a service. Let's just see if it works. If the TCP is the only thing I'm worried about, sometimes the port gets blocked or called up whenever I shut stuff down and pull stuff back. But here's a little test application I've got that has all five of the services that are in this particular solution that we're going to deploy. Of the ones in here, all of these should work besides the MSMQ right now. So if I press TCP and it works, it came back with how many milliseconds it took to call that service. And if I press it again, it'll get faster because it's warming up, right? Here's the basic binding, so I can punch in and say, okay, well, it took it to make one call, it took 33 milliseconds. This is the WS HTTP, which is the default binding that's part of WCF. And then we have the old ASMX service down here. So we just kind of, let's clear this. We can just sort of do one at a time. And depending on what my computer is doing, you'll sort of see that, well, TCP is way faster than the old ASMX way. And so right there, if you're going from .NET to .NET client, you've got a tremendous speed increase already. And even if you move to basic or WS binding, it's still faster than old ASMX. And the reason that is because of the serialization is so much faster and better in WCF because it uses the data contract serializer to serialize the objects instead of the plain old system.xml type of serialization. So all of this works, but except if I put in one for MSMQ, it's going to blow up. The application is going to stop, okay, because it's not configured. So let's get that one to work, and then we'll be done. And this particular service lives, we deployed it, and it lives over here on credit service async. And so we deployed a net MSMQ binding. Again, it's net MSMQ binding. And this is one of those errors that you will get and you can search for and you'll find 5,000 million hits on it. But what is really wrong? And the message doesn't do a good job of telling you, although it sort of does. It says ensure the queue is open and required. MSMQ is installed. We already have MSMQ installed on this machine, but one of the things we don't have configured is the queue. So inside of the computer management, running as an administrator, I want to create a queue to put my messages in that are coming from the service to pull credit. And the way that you do things with net MSMQ with WCF is you use private queues to pass and store these messages. And so in this example, the way I've got it configured is I'm just going to create a private queue. I'm going to mark a transaction because I don't want to lose these messages. I want them to survive reboots and you know, partake in all the transactional goodness that I get. But now I got a question of what do I put as the private queue name? This is one of those things that you know I had to search around for and trial and error and everything else. The name of the queue and the way it sort of maps out is if I scroll down to where I have this configured in the code, you can see that I have the address is net.msmq kelder-pc. Now, Kelder PC is the name of this particular laptop. I guess it should be called Kelder-laptop, but it's called Kelder-PC. And so that's the name of the computer because MSNQ goes from machine to machine. It doesn't go through URLs where you can have, you know, host headers and multiple computers answering as one name. This is the machine name, and it's going to write it to a private queue out to this endpoint called WCF test server credit service async.svc. This part right here is what we're going to use as the particular name of the queue. And the way this maps out is if you look at the way the service is hosted, this is the exact same URL that's in the service. So it's Elderville slash. Mm-hmm. We're going to grab that part of it. So whatever's after that is what we're going to use as the queue name. Okay, and that's kind of one of the most important pieces that people scratch their heads around. And so that's what we're going to type in as the queue name here. We're going to click OK. Now we have a transactional queue. And we're just going to set the properties on it for security. We're going to be extremely secure and give everyone full access just to make sure the demo works. And now we have a queue, and if we refresh, hey, we got rid of that message. We gave it permissions to write to the queue, everybody. Of course, you would normally give it the application tool name, would have access to do whatever you needed to do in the queue. And now we got rid of that particular message. So now we're back to this protocol thing not being supported again, and we're sort of now starting to see that we're starting to rinse and repeat, and we go, okay, I kind of know what to do. So we're going to go back into the default website, and we're going to edit the bindings. We're going to choose net.msnq, and I'm just going to put in the binding name of the PC. Click OK. Hit close. And again, if we don't go at it here, we're going to get the same error. So for sake of time, I won't repeat that. MSMQ. Okay, so we added NetTCP, HTTP, and MSMQ. So this one application that we deployed is supporting three different protocols. Mm-hmm. And two of them are actually different with HTTP. One is for backwards compatibility stuff, and another one is for other people. More or less the WS binding clients. And so we click OK, and we refresh, and we should get back our page. We did. We can click the WSDL. I always like to click the WSDLs to make sure that I got the right names and everything is lining up. And now we just deployed an MSNQ service. Again, you got to have the WAS activation process running in services, and all we're doing is taking advantage of those bindings. So let's run the client again. And let's warm it up. Get all these guys going. Those guys should be fairly warm. And we should be able to put a message into the queue, and it worked. So we're able to, we got one service, guys, that's answering all these different technologies, protocols, and bindings all the way down. That's a little benchmark fun. We say, let's have them all do 100.
100's good.
100's good. And we can kind of see what the winner is. So it took 24 milliseconds for TCP, took 390 for MSNQ. It can do better. So it did 94. The basic binding.
That should be a fire and forget. So what is that time measuring? Right? Because if it's measuring for TCP, you're waiting for 100 responses to come back with random credit scores plus 50 if they're in Mississippi.
Yeah, right. And whenever the MSNQ runs, the MSNQ, we've done benchmarks internally, and you can shove 1,000 messages a second into an MSNQ queue. Sort of the difference here is that you're writing the message to the disk. So whenever I press the button, my hard drive on my laptop sort of flickers, and it's also answering all those messages at the same time.
Okay.
You know, so it's writing it to queue, making sure it's durable so that the messages persist at the disk. I could write 50 there and turn the laptop off, and that when I came back up, the 50 messages would still be there. That's one of the main differences. So it's partaking in a transaction. The messages are going durable to the file system, survive reboots, and then they get processed. So overhead-wise, you can push more messages through MSNQ than you can TCP.
Just and that leads me to a production question about this, because, you know, again, a lot of people are really just getting into WCF as a methodology, and they're probably having the typical developer consideration when they're watching this demo saying, yeah, this is great with, you know, really small load. But what about production load? So what do you do to test for production load beyond what you've shown us here? And how often do you actually host production services that have multiple protocols going on one endpoint? I mean, what is the practical reality of this in your experience?
Well, for my team, it's very practical because we have to deal with everybody. We have to deal with people that are .NET, Java, PHP, 4GL, all kinds of stuff. So it's very practical for us to have a TCP, a service hosted at TCP, which we'll have in our framework that we give the developers. They won't even know that they're hitting a TCP service. It's really just like a remote call, right?
Yeah. Right.
But in the framework, it's going out through WCF and hitting a TCP service through binary. And then the other clients, like the PHP guys and the Java people, they will hit a basic binding service down here because they need to interop with the same service. And then we also may do it to where we may allow, you know, queues to be used. And so we have a case in one of the apps that we recently deployed. We're using all three of these on one application. I mean, it's in real world, and it's answering logging messages from all of our applications in, you know, all day.
So that answers the first part of my question, which is, you know, is it really practical? And your answer is yes, and we're using it. The second part of my question is, how, if at all, maybe you didn't, you know, but how, if at all, are you load testing it during development?
Load testing it?
Yeah.
You mean like running the load test?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like what specific methodologies? Are you just using a test harness like this, or are you using, you know, anything more sophisticated? How are you testing it?
Well, our QA people have the Mercury tool suite.
Uh-huh.
They can hit services really well.
Yep.
They can't hit this TCP service, which is kind of a, you know, kind of a bad thing.
Right.
But there's a client that's part of WCF called the WCF test client.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I'm totally going off the cuff here. I haven't even tried this.
Oh, but that's why we like this show, you know.
We like to do these, yeah. So here's my service. And so I have this WCF test client. I'm just going to add this service endpoint there.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see that it actually will pick up all three bindings. So it says, hey, if you want to use the TCP binding, then click this. And if you want to use the HTTP or the basic. So I can test this particular binding simply from this tool, which can then be scripted with those tools as well. So I could pass in, you know, this particular client lives in Hattiesburg, ASDF, ASDF. The only thing I'm really looking for is state. We'll give it Mississippi, and then we invoke. And so we're calling that same service that the client you just saw did, and we return 659 and 532 for, okay? So we're invoking it. And so that's a good way for the QA department to script against, you know, a particular service, because when you build the contracts correctly and everything lines up, this tool allows you to test complex objects, which is really nice in those scenarios. Now, if you want to run other load tests, well, then we have tools built in the Visual Studio that will allow you to run. And the nice thing about WCF services is they're completely mockable. Mockable means that I can create a mocked object of that. And so I can simulate how that service is going to run or perform based in given scenarios, because everything is designed by contract. You know, it's programmed to an interface. And so we can run different simulations with the testing tool as part of Team Foundation server suite and benchmark our actual code and see where things are at too, you know, in there. So there's several ways to skin that cat, I guess is what I'm saying.
Cool. Well, yeah, I just think that it's always beneficial for the people listening in to benefit from your experience. Now, this WCF test client, is this part of the SDK, or where did you get that? Or is that in Visual Studio?
Just open a Visual Studio command prompt, type
uh-huh.
WCF test client.
So it's part of Visual Studio, okay.
It comes with the framework, it's part of Visual Studio. And then there's also another one called WCF SVC host. And this one is where you can take a DLL and just post any service you want with this particular WCF service host executable, and then you can run scenarios. So, like, you can take a WCF DLL, give it to a QA person, and they can just host that service locally on their machine with this WCF service host tool. You don't need IIS to configure it. You don't need anything. You just go right down to the lower metal, I guess. And so that's also another tool. And Visual Studio uses this tool whenever you launch a WCF service. It will use this tool to basically host the service for you automatically. So those
cool.
are two good tips I would give everybody.
That's great. Are there any other third-party tools that you find yourself using in production, or have these been adequate along with Visual Studio Team System to do your testing?
I would say for most of our testing, we do a lot of stuff in unit tests and integration tests and those things. And so that's been pretty good for us. There are some other tools out there. I don't know any offhand,
mm-hmm.
but there are some other tools out on CodePlex. And if you go to CodePlex.com and search for WCF, there's some other really good open source tools that some guys are building that do a lot of other cool things with WCF, more so than what sort of think of the WCF test client that I showed you here. Think of that on steroids, and mm-hmm. you can kind of get an idea of what it may do and how it may look.
Now, I know, again, it's my day to put you on the spot, so you can just say no if you haven't, but have you had any look yet at .NET 4 or even just looking at Windows 7, you know, in the interim?
Windows 7 I've got extensive use of. WCF 4 I have looked at. I know all the stuff. I've had some contact with the product team.
Mm-hmm.
But I am so confused over what's under NDA and not.
Staying
away from it.
That's like us. Okay. So you're basically in the world of billable hours and production products, which is probably what most people want to hear about anyway.
I tend to stay with what somebody can install today. I mean, I'll play with other stuff and sort of go down that route. Like, Windows 7, I'm loving Windows 7. I've done a lot of things with it. I'm running it right now on the machine that I'm actually on now with four monitors, and I'm a remote desktop into my laptop where I'm doing this demo from. So I'm really liking Windows 7, and I can't wait to get the final release. Hurry up, Lynn. Give it to you.
Looking on it. Did you do anything special with the client-side code that you had for the test? I mean, or did you just do the standard add service reference?
Just add service reference. It didn't anything special there. And then it generated, the binding endpoints off of what was there. So there's an MSMQ. There's the basic HTTP. And again, people should be aware that, these particular settings are not optimal. They're really throttled down. And so you should go out and look at things. Like, for example, max string content link. This is one of those things that will haunt you to your dying day. You probably want to have more data than 891 bytes floating through your service. Max array links and those things for dealing with a large collection of things. So, these things you'll need to, tweak to make sure that you cover your bases on those.
So, Keith, we've got a question in the queue about the scalability if you go with something like a cluster for deploying these services. Would that be something you consider, or would it be that if HTTP based, you might be looking at a load balancer?
Yeah, we do load balancers. We use F5 load balancers internally. I guess I can say that, because I just did. But we use F5 load balancers, and that's actually one of those rusty washers that I like to talk about with WCF. That we have found that when you're deploying this WCF service to one thing, it works well. But when you deploy it to two different servers, and then you're load balancing between the two, because of that host header problem that we did earlier, where I went into the config file and I commented, I turned on the base prefix filter that was in there. I don't know if you guys remember that. That particular problem will haunt you. I can't even find it now. That particular issue will haunt you because, you probably want to hit the service as the computer name. Like, I want to hit this as, let me go to Kelder PC, because that's the name of the PC. Well, it's not configured to enter as Kelder PC. We configured the binding to enter as Elderville, right? And so since it's that service problem where you have multiple bindings and it's not filtered out, it's harder to do that. And what we wind up doing, I guess, or what I've seen some of the engineers do, is they'll create some kind of, stats.aspx page in the service, and they'll hit that to see which machine is running. It basically bypasses WCF and just goes straight, ASP.NET, and they'll be able to hit the service from different machines to know, what's up, what's running, what's not running.
Okay.
And that's one of those things I brought up to the product teams as well, and said, hey guys, can we fix this for it's great that we can load balance and do that stuff with, but there's a problem. Is how do you know which server is out of production? So you run into some of those kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have to do little tricks like this to kind of figure out, is that service running or not on that server.
Can you take advantage of any of the capabilities of IIS 7 where you can set up one of them as a configuration server, and then that be a sort of a master, and then there's another IIS server that's a slave and picks up all its config data from the first one? Have you done that?
I have not. I have not done that. I sure haven't.
Might be something that might help in the load balance scenarios, but I'm not sure. How about any of the WCF? This is a question from Mike. Can you take advantage of the WCF built-in facilities like SOAP routing in the case of your HTTP bindings or for load balancing?
You'll be able to do that a much easier and stuff in .NET 4.0.
Okay.
There's some great stuff coming for routing in .NET 4.0. And again, I'm at the point where I don't know what I can and can't say and what's been released. But go out and search for .NET 4.0 routing. You should be able to find some information out there on that.
Okay. One of the other things that I want to mention to our listeners is that we are going to post a list of resources following this GeekSpeak today, so you can get links to things that were mentioned, like the CodePlex project and stuff like that, and then .NET 4.0 information. So as we come across that information, we'll make it available through our blog. So, Keith, we've actually eaten up the hour, which is great. We get to see all the challenges of breaking it and fixing it and redeploying and so on. I'm going to go back to our deck and give our folks sort of a final slide here that has resources to past and upcoming GeekSpeaks, my blog and Lynn's blog, as well as your blog, which is down here at keithelder.net. Any sort of last best practice recommendations or guidance or words of wisdom from the elder around WCF and deployment?
In terms of WCF best practices, go out to GNR TV, which is run by good friends Carl Franklin does that.
Yep.
And on there is a show by Miguel Castro, a good friend of mine, who's also into getting into WCF a lot these days. And he shows you kind of the proper way. That's how I build my WCF services. And so if you go watch that DNR TV episode with Miguel, you'll get an idea as to how I do my stuff.
Okay.
Because what I showed you today is just sort of, it's fuzzy demo, drag and drop, data set, glory, just to make it work. But that's not how I really do my services. It's contractual. There's a lot of really good testing around it. And so Miguel's got a really good hour-long episode on DNR TV that shows you kind of how a lot of us, deal with that. So,
excellent. Well, Keith, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate the insight into WCF.
Awesome. Have a great time, Glenn.
Thanks for co-hosting, Lynn.
Great. And Keith, thank you again from me, and thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We're going to continue to bring you GeekSpeak, maybe a little less frequently across the summer, but we will do it on a pretty regular basis. So please check out the MSPN GeekSpeak page for the upcoming shows, and always feel comfortable to submit directly to us via our blogs any suggestions you have. Some things we're looking at is some coverage around the Silverlight launch and Windows 7 as well. Some of you may know that I've been doing some work around Windows 7 development myself, so getting to know quite a few experts there. We do have a few more questions in the queue, and we'll stay on to answer those, but I think at this time we'll turn it back over to the producer to finish up.
Thanks, Lynn. I'd like to remind everyone that you may print a PDF of the slides by clicking Control-P. You can either print or save the slides locally for your convenience. You should all be seeing a survey slide in your area. If you could take a moment to fill it out before you log off, we do appreciate any feedback you leave for us. All you need to do is follow the links provided to complete the evaluation. And with that, I'm going to hand the floor back over to our host to wrap up the questions.
We just have one more quick one. Keith, you still there?
Yes.
Yep. So the question is, how do we keep track of service references from the client if the service gets changed from one server to another? And I guess that goes back to your storing in the database and the name value pairs?
Yeah, pretty much. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Or you can always hard code it.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to store it somewhere, and you got to be able to get it from that place once you need it. So then that's really all it boils down. It's just a straight logical problem. Yeah.
Right. Excellent. Okay, well, thanks again for coming on, and that wraps up another GeekSpeak.
I'd like to remind everyone to take a moment to fill out the survey prior to exiting the session room, and with that, I'd like to send... And a special thanks to our host, Glenn Gordon and Lynn Leggett, and our guest, Keith Elder, for today's presentation. Thank you all for joining us today. You may now disconnect from the audio portion of today's conference.